Welcome back to the latest episode of the Electric Podcast. Fred Lambert, your host as usual, and then I'm joined with Seth Weintraub. How are you doing, Seth?
Good. How are you doing, Fred?
I'm doing great, thank you. And we had a huge week this week with the release of the Model 3 production results and deliveries of Model 3S and X, of course, and a bunch of other news that I'm going to hit soon enough. But I want to start off first because this week started with the 1st of April, April Fool's Day. And as usual, we got a few April Fool's shows from EV companies. It started with Elon Musk doing a sort of a poking fun a little bit at the Tesla naysayers, the Tesla haters that were saying last week, as we discussed, that the company was going bankrupt and they were crying wolf again about Tesla's always impending doom. But what we took out of the April Fool's joke is that he was showing a lot of confidence into what Tesla was about to release, so we didn't know exactly what was going to be the production result this week, what was going to be the production rate to exit the first quarter of 2018. Of course, we already had a pretty good idea about the deliveries. It always goes down a little bit in the first quarter versus the crazy fourth quarter as usual. But he wouldn't have done this joke that the joke was basically, if you didn't see it, that Tesla is bankrupt and Elon Musk is found dead or sleeping. What was it exactly?
Passed out or something.
Passed out drunk or something like that. Elon was found passed out against the Tesla Model 3, surrounded by Tesla Kila bottles, the tracks of dried tears still visible on his cheeks. This is not a forward-looking statement.
a cardboard bank-whopped.
Yeah.
Sign.
Bank-whopped and written on the Tesla wall connector box, as if he's living in a box or something. So you don't do that if you're not you already know a lot. At that point, it was the 1st of April. You already know exactly what was the result of the first quarter that was supposed to be unveiled. So I think that the big takeaway from that was that Tesla was going to announce some pretty good numbers, which was we wrote at the time in the Electric Stake. Before going into those numbers, though, there was also another noteworthy, I think, April Fool's from an EV company. Well, not exactly an EV company, but Porsche.
Which soon to be.
Soon to be, which eventually will make EVs starting next year. And what was funny about that joke is that it shouldn't be funny. It's not funny. It's not an April Fool's joke. The joke is basically a press release about a Porsche all-electric tractor. That was a joke. Like, there was no punchline in it or anything. No fun statement. It was as if they were releasing a standard press release about unveiling a new electric tractor. So I thought it was funny because it shouldn't be funny. Like, yeah, you should be making a Porsche used to make tractors like way back. And if they were to start making tractors again, which I don't think they will, like they pretty much...
Not their brand at the moment.
Yeah, they really transitioned into a sports cars and luxury vehicles. But if they were to expand and make tractors again, it would have to be electric. So my article about Porsche April Fool's here was more about that shouldn't be a joke. It's the only way this is funny is if electric tractors are funny, and I don't think they are. And someone should make one. And I mentioned that John Deere has an electric tractor program. They have a prototype and everything, but they haven't said anything about bringing the vehicle to production yet, which is kind of disappointing. But now, going into the production results and delivery results from the first quarter. So pretty much as good as it gets, right, Seth?
I don't know about that.
No?
Could have been a little better.
You're talking about Model 3 production, or?
Yeah, I mean, I guess 2,500 would have been, you know...
Yeah,
they did hoping for.
Came in at about 2,000 instead of 2,500. But that's something that I started thinking about when I was on Shitter earlier this week, and they keep admiring that they missed the production number, which is correct. I mean, but I think we're putting too much emphasis on that actual production target, because every time Tesla talked about it, there was a big asterisk next to it. Like, it's very hard to predict a production ramp, especially a production ramp like Tesla, which is set to be exponential. So, of course, it's going to sound like I'm making excuses for Tesla here, which I am. But I think it's still a fair point that it's extremely difficult to predict that exactly. It's easier on the longer term. Like, so that's why I was always focused on the end of Q2 exit rate, which was 5,000 units per week. I think that's the really important number. And that's, I think that was the biggest, the most important news from the press release, is that they still think that that target is achievable by the end of Q2. And that target, of course, comes with Tesla expected to reach a positive gross margin on Model 3, which will make the whole vehicle program contribute positively to Tesla's cash flow and to its overall business. So now you can more easily start going into the Model Y and start talking about expansion and everything, not just trying to reach the catching up to previously missed production target on the Model 3. So yeah, so that was the biggest news, I think. Then of course the 2,000 units per week is a miss, but it's also a big increase over a short period of time. So that was the most important thing, I think.
Musk clarified that 2,000 wasn't just a stretch. It's what the baseline is now going forward.
Yeah, that was the big thing too, and that was also confirmed this week with. Excuse me, with all the new VIN registered with Neshtas this week. So, excuse me.
In addition to the 2,000 a week, the National Highway Safety Board, I think, has a recall site where this has nothing to do with recalls, but you have to register the VINs that are going into production, and it's one of the methods, but. That we track deliveries or production
because the
production ramp,
they assign that VIN before production when it goes into production before it goes to production.
So over the last week, things have gotten pretty crazy. Like I think just
7,000 in this week alone in 2 days.
Right.
So that was the meaning of that we were talking to earlier, is that if it means that Tesla is maintaining the production rate that they reached in the last quarter. And that wasn't the case for the previous quarter before, which raised a lot of doubts within the industry about Tesla, how Tesla reports those numbers, if they were just extrapolating from the last few days of production because they pushed very hard for the last few days just to look good on the quarterly report, which was a fair point because that's what they did last quarter. But it certainly looks like that's not what they're doing this quarter. Now they are able to produce over 2,000 Model 3 per week, maybe even more now at this point based on the registration of the VINs alone. And as for the Model S and X, it's still a production of 2,000 units. So Tesla is technically producing 4,000 cars per week total, which is pretty insane when you think about that Tesla wasn't producing that per year six, seven years ago. And now they are pretty much producing cars at the rate that Porsche is producing cars. So it's pretty insane how quickly they become a big player. As for Model S and X, deliveries weren't bad for a first quarter. So it went down from the last quarter, of course, because of all that comes with the end of the year and having the tax credit and everything. But 11,730 for a Model S. 10,070 for the Model X. So close to 30, almost 30,000 total deliveries, because the Model 3 came in at 8,180, which is not bad. And that was a big thing too, because since Tesla doesn't break down deliveries per market, we know for sure that those 8,180 were all in the US, which makes the Model 3 the best-selling electric car in the US by a wide margin. We reported on that earlier this week.
Yeah, what the Bolt have? I think it was 1,700 or 1,900 or something.
Yeah, the Bolt came in at...
For the month.
Yeah, here. The Bolt EV, 3,375 units. So less than half of what the Model 3 delivered for the first 3 months of the year. And if you look into, like, Tesla, pretty much, we're almost certain that Tesla has the three best-selling electric cars in the U.S. Like I said, they don't confirm the model. They don't break down per market, so we don't know exactly for the Model S and X. But what we do is we estimate based on Tesla's end of the year breakdown in revenue, which is not ideal, but it can give us with a lot of confidence that between 40 and 50% of deliveries are in the U.S. So if we do that, Model S comes in at between 4,700 and 5,900, while the Model X comes in at between 4,000 and 5,000, which both range, whether at the beginning of the range or the end of the range, beat the Bolt. So in terms of all electric cars, Tesla probably has the three best-selling. Then you can also throw the Prius Prime into the mix, but that's a plug-in.
Yeah. And the Nissan Leaf, the 2018, should start ramping up pretty.
Yeah, it's not clear that they're doing well in Japan. They're starting to do well in Europe, but mainly like in Norway, and it's really fragmented bear market in Europe. In the U.S., it started very slow, just a few hundred units the first 2 months. But last month, they delivered 1,500 units, which, like, brings him back to the usual level of what they were selling before the next gen arrived. So it's nothing crazy yet. But we don't know how popular is it in the U.S.
I think the big problem that I've been talking to a lot of EV buyers, and I think the big problem with the Leaf is that the batteries aren't they're passively cooled. They're not actively cooled with a cooling system or heated. Basically, if you turn on the air conditioning in your car, it kind of cools the battery a little bit, and it's just air cooled. So, we've seen graphs of battery degradation, and Nissans are just like really bad compared to Chevys or Teslas.
That's one thing we didn't touch last week, but you bringing it up now, it's interesting. We saw that the 30 kilowatt hour pack, which came in after the 24, the original 24 kilowatt hour pack that Nissan was selling, actually has a more aggressive degradation rate than the original pack, which is kind of worrying. they went the wrong way.
I was reading about that, and it sounds like Nissan now just lets you charge 100%, and that change, to get that extra range.
Yeah.
That change has made the battery degrade faster. So, if you have a Nissan and you don't want your battery to degrade, you might not want to charge it to 100%.
Yeah.
You just like do
well,
it
not,
manually.
Not just Nissan, too. Like mine, I keep my Model S, I keep it at 80% all the time unless I need it for something.
Yeah. I mean, that it kind of warns you, like, when we just got back from Florida, it warns you. After like 2 or 3 days of going 100%, like it tells you that the battery degrades, and it'll ask you if you want to keep it at 100%.
Yeah.
So I think that's what Nissan is just not good with batteries.
Yeah, and of course that was the 30 kilowatt hour pack, which was introduced I think in 2016, and now they have the 40 kilowatt hour pack with the next gen. So we don't know about this one yet, since it's, of course...
But it's still passively cooled. Like,
yeah, it is. It might be new. No, it's not even new cells. Is it still cells from the AESC, like their own battery company?
As far as I know.
I think yes.
I thought they at some point they were thinking about going to like LG Chem like everybody else.
But. Well, I think that's the thing for the next pack for the 2019 with the 60-kilowatt pack. So, yeah, maybe it's still a problem for the 40 kilowatt. So, yeah, the 2018 might not be really the year for the Nissan yet. I think a lot of people is going to be waiting for the new 60 kilowatt pack with faster charging and the temperature control BMS.
Meanwhile, hanging out in the Chevy Bolt groups, there's guys who've had their Bolts for over a year and have lost 0%. They're still at 100% battery.
Yeah, well, so, like you said, Nissan doesn't have that buffer anymore. while the bolt does use that buffer for degradation. So that's and that's good on Chevy and the bigger pack, 260 kilowatt pack. So you have more room to play with here.
Yep.
But moving on to other news this week, still on the Model 3 though, we reported that the first deliveries arrived in China and Dubai. Of course, we're not talking about official deliveries from Tesla, but we're talking about owners importing their cars. A few weeks ago, we reported about this similar situation in Europe, especially in Germany, where a bunch of Model 3, of used Model 3, ended up on the market from resellers, getting their hands on them in the U.S., then importing them into Europe and reselling them there with a big markup, of course, for the service. And our recommendation was, of course, not to buy those.
So I'm just curious, what do these people do? Do they just charge at home and they don't worry about supercharging? Or,
well, there's talk right now about, because technically you should be able to use CHAdeMO on the adapter, but there was a problem with the Model 3, with using the Model 3 with those adapters. But there's talk about other adapters that you could use with it, in the similar sense that you have like the Tesla to Level 2 adapters that I think Quick Power sells and other companies like that. So there are alternatives, but the supercharger is basically out of question. And it's a big part of the Tesla experience, having access to the supercharger. So you can forget about that, at least for now, unless there's an adapter that comes up. But we don't know about any of them right now. There's also some issues with, like, you get free internet with all your Teslas right now. There's just a free connection with it. So you don't, that comes with Tesla having a deal with a local broadband company. And they just don't have that for the Model 3 right now in the market that they haven't launched. So you pretty much have to, well, I actually don't even know if you can for the Model 3, but I know in the Model S you can access where you put your SIM card and everything, so you can do it yourself at some point. I'm not even sure for the Model
3. You could also get like a MiFi card or share your phone's internet connection, which is not great, but, you know.
Yeah, it's another thing that's good for, that comes with a car, like supercharger. It doesn't make the car unusable, but it's an advantage that you lose with importing your car like that. So the first guy that did it in China was apparently a guy that's really popular in the Tesla community in Asia, especially in China and Hong Kong, where the he owns a company that does accessories just for Tesla and other cars too. But he builds a lot like EVNX does in the US. They do in China, if you will, and. You got his hand on one and imported it to China. The other one in Dubai is pretty cool, I think. You see it? You can go on Electrek to take a look. But he made a few custom modifications to it. Not unlike what we saw from Franz von Halsen as Tesla a few weeks ago. So a full chrome delete. Deleted the chrome of the dollar handles and matched it completely to the dark paint of the car, which I think is a big improvement overall. Then also the chrome delete on the window sills, all deleted too. And he has some custom wheels too. That's
those are 20s, right?
Looks like. I think those are...
maybe even 21s or something.
The T-Sport line, I think.
Okay.
That looks like the T-Sport line, 20-inch wheel for the Model 3. Looks great. Looks like I think the chrome delete, and especially those on the door handle thing.
Did they drop it at all? It looks dropped a little bit.
Well, that's another thing too. That's already been starting to be pretty popular with Model 3 owners already. Some custom suspension that drops a little bit your suspension.
Is anybody doing air suspension custom?
Not custom yet, but as we reported this week, Tesla is bringing up some air suspension soon, probably for the Model 3. One car was spotted in on a racetrack in California with a bunch of Model 3 was there, and one of them, someone on TMC, got pictures underneath the front wheel, and you can clearly see that it has air suspension. And you know for sure, even though you didn't take a picture of the whole car, you know for sure it's a Model 3 because of the suspension arm. And then you see the Hurst suspension on it. And
it's crazy. Crazy he thought to do that. Like, I would never, I mean, maybe I would, but I would,
the guy was at the racetrack to test drive a car or something, so he knew, he probably knew what he was doing.
Yeah, true.
And yeah, so Tesla was testing that car, which had dual motor. Well, had a front wheel, a front motor, and a back motor. Then it had air suspension too. So what most people assume is that that was a performance vehicle, performance Model 3. Which is interesting because Tesla hasn't talked about a performance Model 3 for a while now. I know that Elon Musk promised it a while back. But if you look at all the Model 3 literature on Tesla website and everything that came out since the official start of the production of the Model 3, there's just no reference at all about the performance vehicle. And if you look at the delivery windows and everything, there's mention of the dual motor, of course, the standard battery pack and everything, but nothing about performance vehicle. And I think that's like what's burning me about that is if you are planning to make a purchase, you want to know what are your options are, what's coming. So that's something that always bothered me about the rollout of the Model 3 because, like, for example, what's the price of the dual motor?
No idea.
Yeah, we don't know. And for me, I want the dual motor, I know for sure. So I know money is not going to be an object at this point. And I know it's gonna, not going to be more than like $5,000 or two. So it's not like going to be crazy. But I know there has to be people out there that are thinking, maybe I want the dual motor.
Depending on the price.
Yeah, but not if it's more than $4,000, for example. Then there's it's not helping them that Tesla says mid-2018 for the dual motor option. So I really wish that Tesla would just release more information about that. And that's one of the interesting things that came out of the production result earlier this week because they did say that... Because they addressed the fact that some people were not ordering the Model 3. They were receiving their invitation to configure the car, but they weren't actually ordering the car. And that's something that came out a week before that with the Bernstein report. Bernstein was, of course, short on Tesla and tried to make everything worse than it is. But the got picked up in the media a lot. The fact that I'm talking about the fact that they did a Model 3 owner, not Model 3 owner, but... a survey of people that receive a Model 3 invitation, and they said only 30% of them ended up ordering it. And as we discussed at the time, it's based on not having access to all the configurations. So Tesla actually addressed that in the release of the result. They said the reason for order cancellation are almost entirely due to the delays in production in general, and delays in availability of certain plane option, particularly dual motor all-wheel drive and the smaller battery pack. As described above, owner happiness and the production is extremely high. Yeah, they were saying that...
Which kind of is common sense, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know like why this is so hard for people.
Yeah, but like
it feels like they have a thesis, like Tesla's in trouble, mm-hmm. and then they're working their way backwards.
Exactly. Exactly. That's when I was in Shadar last week, that was the first question they asked me, like, oh, did you see the Bernstein report? Or did 30%? Like, it sounds so bad. And for most people that just don't know about it, that don't know about the rollout that is happening, of course you're going to think that. But just look into it a little bit and doesn't make sense at all. Just
yeah, and anybody who's an owner or, you know, who's buying one knows, like, hey, there's one configuration available. Yeah. I mean, there's probably some people, I mean, you know, all-wheel drive, clearly, but there's some people who are waiting for the performance version. And, you know, like that's going to be a big chunk of people, too.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a high end. That's not going to be 35,000. That's going to be like 70,000.
Mm-hmm. And so, of course, because like one of the biggest bold point for Tesla is the demand for the Model 3 because they have like almost 500,000 reservations and something like that. So that's directly attacking that, which is arguably the best bold point about Tesla. So the bears just love it and eat it up like it's ice cream. But we can move on probably from the Model 3 now. We already did 25 minutes on the Model 3 like we do pretty much every week. And we'll come back to it later. Yeah, it's going to come up again by the end of the show. But last week, we forgot to talk about the Tesla solar roof. We just completely start right by, so we need not to forget about talked about it by the end of the show. But right now, we're going to talk about the Tesla Autopilot, which, unfortunately, the only reason it's in the news for the past 2 weeks is because of the fatal crash that happened 3 weeks ago in Mountain View. But Now, moving on what happened in this specific crash, what we got this week is a bunch of owners tried to replicate the circumstances around the crash, which
we don't recommend.
Yeah, it's interesting, and we kind of hypocrites about it because we report about it and everything. It's interesting to us and to a lot of owners too. But like for the first one especially, so we reported on the first one, which wasn't recreated at the actual place where the crash happened. It was recreated in Chicago, but the actual situation, like the road, the markings on the road, and the split with the divider and the median, and where there's the barrier, it's extremely similar to where the accident happened. And the owner almost crashed trying to replicate it. So first of all, he was holding the camera when doing it, which is not a good idea. If you want to do that, please invest into a mount and like GoPro, something that you can mount and not have to touch it while films. Just don't use your phone or something. That's first of all, it's illegal. I think it's pretty much illegal in most places, and it's illegal for a reason. It's dangerous, and in this case, since it wasn't exactly on the same, it showed a weakness that might have led to the accident. Is when the autopilot is seeing a divider and there's no line directly leading to the divider, so it pretty much split open without markings in between, it will stay attached to the left lane. And if the left lane becomes, not the left lane, I mean the left line of the lane, becomes the right line of the lane that goes off ramp, if it does that, then the lane becomes the median. And if the lane is the median, you're going to run right through the barrier. So that's what the accident show. And then sure enough, a day or two later, another owner replicated it.
But the same time, spot.
Yeah, at the exact same spot. And what this one showed, it showed the exact same thing. So the exact same issue with the autopilot keeping focus on the left lane, on the left line of the lane, and when the divider happened, the left line became the right line of the lane going off ramp, so you end up directly in the median. But in this case, though, you have a lot of time to respond, so it's not like the Chicago thing. The owner got right back into the right lane, and had like well over 5 seconds to do that. So for sure, the driver died during the accident in Montevideo wasn't paying attention. That's
right. And so that's the high level kind of takeaway, mm-hmm. because there is no auto. There's no autonomous driving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, self-driving. Like that does not exist. So any accident that happens while you're using autopilot 2 or whatever is your fault. Because, you know, it's not meant to be, you're not meant to be able to read a book or go to sleep or whatever. You know, we actually, it's kind of funny, we got this, well, not funny, but we got this tip from a guy who fell asleep with autopilot on and ran right through a toll booth and, you know, flipped his car after it, like, jumped the toll booth. And, you know, he's got pictures and everything of the incident. And he's like, you know, I don't get it. It's just, like autopilot sucks. And I'm like, dude, you fell asleep in your car. Like, you're not supposed to do that. And you know, just like people just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's the branding, the autopilot.
That might be it. Yeah.
I don't know. So you know, popular culture.
Yeah, there has to be. Like it's always the truth is in the middle or something, but there has to be some part of the communication about the system that it's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. So for sure, the communication about how the system works to the owners is not perfect. So a bunch of owners are, and also there's the fact that Tesla says that eventually it's going to be fully self-driving. So when is it going to be? So every time it's improving, and of course we've been hammering that there was a big improvement last month with the latest update, which is of course boosting confidence into the update. So I think for sure on my part, I'm going to really make a point to always, regardless of what type of autopilot article I'm writing, if it's like a new update or something, always remind everyone that you need to keep paying attention. Until Tesla can tell you to go to sleep in a car, just pay attention, whatever, for whatever reason. that's the big takeaway, I think. So yeah, you can watch those two videos on Electrek right now. One of them in Chicago and the other in the one in Chicago is it can get you nervous because they really came close to crashing into that barrier. But the other one is it's more informative first because of course it's the exact same location, and there's also there's also a part of the markings. I think they should really fix those markings, and of course the crash attenuator for the barrier, so that the accident wouldn't be as brutal as it was. And of course, Tesla.
It sounds like that was really the cause of death. Was hitting.
Yeah. That was the cause. That's a good point. It was the cause of death. While autopilot, the misuse of autopilot might have been the cause of the accident. But yeah, Tesla needs to work on that specific scenario here of the off ramp, and because it didn't used to do that before the update for a lot of owners too. They realized that it's doing it more with the new update. So maybe there's a something different with the algorithm that makes this a weakness again. And speaking of that accident, so it's under investigation by the NTSB again, like the National Safety Board is looking into it again, like they are doing for the accident with the fire truck. It was an accident with a fire truck a few months back. So there's two separate investigations. And what we pretty much learned this week is that originally, when they first done the investigation, I think a day or two after the crash, NTSB wasn't necessarily looking into the autopilot, so they didn't even know actually that the autopilot was working during the accident. So they were mainly looking into the fire and how to address removing the battery pack after an accident, and also the markings on the road and the fact that there wasn't any crash attenuator at that time and everything. But then, of course, everything pointed to the autopilot after that in the media and everything. So Tesla had to do a response, which they did in two separate blog posts. And apparently NTSB didn't like that. Weren't into it. Actual quote is unhappy about it. And Elon Musk then hit back about that and said that, I'm quoting here, a lot of respect for NTSB, but NHTSA regulates car, not NTSB, which is an advisory board. Tesla releases critical crash data affecting public safety immediately and always will. To do otherwise would be unsafe. Which is probably a fair argument, but I think it was a PR thing first, and like it was a PR situation where Tesla's autopilot was being trashed in the press as being an important part of the accident, and they wanted to explain why. Well, that was also an issue with I had a little bit of an issue with that blog post, because they made it sound like autopilot wasn't like 100%. Like the way they made it sound is that it almost sounded like only the traffic aware cruise control was working. Like there's no mention of auto steer, but auto steer had to be working, of course. You know, we see, not only with the videos, but the fact that the owners got hold the steering wheel advices alerts, and you don't get that if you're just on traffic aware cruise control. So there was a lot of trying to mitigate the situation with that blog post too. So I can also get why NTSB wouldn't be unhappy about that, because it sort of skews the way that they're going to look at the data themselves. But with this said, I'm always for Tesla just releasing as much information as they can about the any accident, because of course it helps us better report on it, and it helps owners to understand what happened and how they can avoid a similar situation, which of course the answer is always just pay attention to the tame road, unfortunately. What else have we had this week? Well, we should probably start talking solar about roof. The solar roof.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the solar roof in months. So
it's actually happening.
Yeah, well, we already saw some installation before, but in the past 2 weeks, what we're starting to see is actual customer installation. So the first installation, we're just at the homes of Tesla employees, even specifically Elon Musk and GB Strouble, Tesla CTO. But other employees too, apparently, got a few installations. We reported on a few others during the winter and even the autumn before that, because officially I think it's in production since last summer as intended, but in production only at Tesla's pilot plant in Fremont. In December and January, they transfer all the production at the Gigafactory 2 in Buffalo, which is the main place when they're where they're producing that stuff. And since then, they've started like the site surveys for the actual customer installation, the first few customers to get their houses. And it's not clear how the rollout is happening. Like, how do you get the first one? I know that at some point they started releasing like the solar roof token to get an early installation with the through the referral program. But I'm not clear if that's real serious. The focus is really in California right now. So if you're not in California, good luck getting one right now.
Yeah, that's kind of how Tesla rolls things out. It's like employees, yeah. California, rest of the U.S., rest of the world.
Yeah. And so we posted a few examples of the first few installations, which looks pretty cool. Looks cool. The tiles, we saw one textured tiles and one smooth tile.
You know, I have to say that lead image house with the flat roof just kind of looks weird to me. Like, there's no, you know, whatever that is, hump. It's just flat.
But that's all tile roofs. We're not used to looking at tiles roof. It's not really popular because it's expensive. It's expensive as right. hell. So it's not when you look at it, it doesn't look exactly like a regular roof. But if you're used to tile roofs, it does look a lot like it. Maybe a little smoother. Like, normally there are textures. Like, most tile roofs are textures. And one of the cases that we reported this week and last week, one of them is smooth. So that one looks like, it almost looks like glass, which it is. But yeah. Tiles is normally not. But I think it looks very cool. And the thing that happened last week when we reported on two specific examples, one was pretty cool. I think we call it the Tesla House of the Future and the perfect Tesla customer, because of course, since Tesla purchased acquired SolarCity, now they are both on the energy producing front, energy and energy consumption, of course, energy production with the solar product and energy consumption with the vehicles. So theoretically, a perfect Tesla customer would have a solar production product, which is either right now the solar roof or a regular rooftop installation with the solar modules. Then they will have also power walls to store that energy when the sun is not shining. And then they will feed that energy into Tesla cars. And this particular customer was called, I think that's a Vietnamese name, or it's Tri Hunyun. Sorry if I messed up your name. But we'll call it perfect Tesla customer, because he has the solar roof right now. He had three power walls installed at his house, and he has a Model 3. So I was talking to him, and I asked him, "Do you have a Tesla power wall connector?" If he, but he doesn't. He had a Chevy Bolt before he had his Model 3, so he installed a regular charge point connector instead of a Tesla connector. So he was pretty close to be exactly the perfect Tesla customer. I think every single product that you can own, of course, not just one car. I'm not talking if you don't need to have all the four of Tesla's vehicles. But yeah, and we talked to him a little bit about the installation itself. So I think it took about 2 weeks, both to remove his whole rooftop and install the new one. Then also install, of course, all the new hardware required, the new inverters. They also had to change his electricity box, and then install the power walls too.
Did we figure out which inverters those were?
No, we didn't.
They're not Tesla inverters, are they?
Yeah, they might be, because they're not branded at all. Like, normally inverters are branded, like there's some badges or something, but I don't see any brands on it. It's almost like it's a commercial inverter. It looks like there's two of them too.
Yeah, it doesn't look like, I'm not a super solar guy, but it doesn't look like the solar edge that SolarCity typically uses. So it's kind of interesting. I wonder if that's the inverter Tesla is going to build themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I should look into that. I'll look more into it, and we'll come back to you about all that. But the roof itself, so about 40% of the tiles actually have solar cells in them. So, of course, there's a mix of the solar cells and non-solar cells, so you don't put a solar cells where you have a shade most of the time, which based on his roof configuration, you have a few spots like that. But you still get a full capacity of 10 kilowatts, about 10 kilowatts for that specific installation. And of course, with three power walls, two, you get almost 40 kilowatts, kilowatt hours of energy storage, which could almost put his whole house half grid. The only issue is that he doesn't expect to be able to turn them on until two other months. And it's not because of Tesla's installation or anything. It's just they need the electric grid's approval. So they need a site survey to turn everything on. And there's a huge backlog right now in California for that stuff. So apparently he's stuck for another 2 months with having this system. A system that cost him $100,000.
Jeez.
Pretty expensive.
So but cheap.
Yeah, what he told me, though, is that that's before state incentives? Not state incentives, but federal incentives. So there's the 30%.
Right, 30%. And then California, I think, also has quite a bit.
Yeah, I think there's two incentives. So, and then you have to look at, you needed a new roof either way. So what he was looking into before purchasing the solar roof was just a new roof with the solar installation on top. So he wanted just regular solar modules. And he was quoted for that at $70,000, also before incentives. So, of course, I don't think you're gonna get 30% on the full $100,000 for the solar roof installation. But those also include the power walls, and the $70,000 didn't include power walls. So that alone is like $15,000 or even more for the installation of the three power walls. So I think it's pretty close. When you look into it, it comes down pretty close. It depends on really how much you can apply that 30% on, I think, because I don't think you can apply like to the tiles, for example, that don't have the solar cells in them, since they're
yeah, that's interesting. I wonder how they break it down.
Yeah.
Also, I wonder if his roof plus solar included the 30% on the solar.
No, that was before incentive too. But of course, that's we don't know the split between the roof and the solar in it. But I have to assume that the roof is probably like 40,000 or less, and the solar modules and the installation and everything is probably like 30,000 for a 10 kilowatt system. That's like what, 20 to 30,000, depending on the installer.
Yeah, something like that.
So you're gonna get 30% off that, but not of the 30 to 40,000 that the actual roof is gonna cost you.
Yeah, so here's something that's kind of interesting about this. You know, when you look at the setup, you have DC power coming off your roof. You have DC coming out of the batteries. Then you have to turn it back to AC with an inverter to get it into your walls and back to the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And then your charger is still AC. So and then inside your car, it's going from AC back to DC again. So I have to believe that Tesla is going to, you know, they have those city DC chargers now that are like 25 kilowatt or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have to believe that Tesla is going to have a charger that comes right off of the inverter, or, you know, like right off the power wall or something.
Yeah, right off the batteries.
Right. That doesn't need to be switched twice from AC to, DC. Thereby saving at least 10% of efficiency, and you know all the heating costs and extra equipment. I'm just surprised that they haven't built that yet. And additionally, I'm kind of surprised that Tesla hasn't done what Nissan's doing and has kind of like a two-way at the Chatamo's a two-way power thing where it feeds DC into the car, but it can also take DC out of the car like a power wall,
yeah,
and into the inverter. And I'm really surprised Tesla hasn't done that, because all of our cars we're driving around are 60 to 100 kilowatt hour batteries, and if the grid should go out, a power wall would be nice, but we have 4 days of electricity sitting in our cars. So I kind of wonder when that whole thing is going to happen, because this current setup isn't optimal. It's good. It's certainly nice. And especially having the app and seeing where the electricity is going is good, but I feel like there's another iteration coming.
Yeah, well, a few points on that. I don't know if you remember, but when Tesla actually unveiled the solar roof and the Powerwall 2 was unveiled at the same time, before it was unveiled, that was what, October 2016, was it?
I think so.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Before it was unveiled, when Elon Musk announced the unveiling event, he said that they're going to unveil a solar roof, or maybe just a solar product or something like that, but a solar product, a Powerwall, and a new charger. He did say that when he unveiled, and then he never unveiled a charger. And I pushed Tesla about that and said, well, hey, what's up with the charger? What's up with the... we're supposed to have three products on that thing. And never got a clear answer on that. So that might have been in the plan at some point and just was dropped for some reason. And as for the bidirectional charger that you were mentioning that Nissan is working on, and I think there's a few other automakers that are working on the same thing, Tesla did point to that at a few points at some time about having a better control on the energy capacity inside the car. But they also sent mixed signal about it. Like at some point, I think it was JB Straubel that said that they're all a bit concerned over the not having an idea. They're pretty much cannibalizing Powerwalls too when you do that. So they want to sell the Powerwall, and they said the Powerwall is a better solution for a few different reasons. First of all, it's always at your house, so you don't have to worry about your car not being at your house when you need it. For example, if the car that can do that is your wife is driving it and you're home and you need it for whatever reason. But the other reason is that the Powerwall also use a battery chemistry that's optimized for weekly cycling. Actually, it was at some point. Now it's not the case anymore. But now they're doing also like daily cycling and stuff like that. But they have different chemistries for these things. So they want also to focus on having the same chemistry. And they don't want to overuse the one in the cars. Not because it can be overused, but because it might make Tesla look bad, or I mean, make Tesla's cars look bad, because they're gonna have a faster degradation than the other cars that don't have that bidirectional technology in them.
So I don't think so. I would I'm thinking of myself. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily forego having a Powerwall. I mean, the reason I would get a Powerwall isn't for electricity savings, because our electric company doesn't have time of use, so you know there's no reason to store. But it would be for an outage, and you know hopefully we would last
a prolonged outage. So you have the power wall for the first few hours, and then if it continues, you go to your car.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That would be our particular use case.
So you just to have the option in case it happens, but it could like only happens once in the lifetime that you had the cars or something like that.
Right. And additionally, what we've done in the past is we put an inverter on the actually 12-volt system. We've done it in our Prius, and I'm pretty sure you can do it on a Tesla or a Chevy. Actually, I asked Chevy about that, and they said you could do it. You can just put a 12-volt inverter on the 12-volt system, take the power out there, and then the DC to DC converter inside the car will power the 12-volt system. So
it's hard on your 12-volt battery, but ultimately it works if you need it.
Yeah, I don't know how that works completely. I think I should try it, but
well, you keep depleting your 12-volt and the bigger battery pack, the lithium battery pack.
I wonder if at some point if it goes direct, like if it does, it just fill up your battery and then stop, and then the battery goes down, or is it just a direct connection of 12-volt battery, and as soon as you're 12-volt battery goes to like 11 volts, then it, you know, then the DC to DC converter comes up and starts powering your house directly.
Oh, okay, I know what you mean.
I don't know how it works. But maybe next time we're at Tesla, we can talk to somebody about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it would be nice if it was just part of the system. Like you plug in your car, and you know your lights go out, Powerwall goes, and then it runs out and says, is there any other power out here? Mm-hmm. And the car's like, yeah, I got a full, you know, 90 kilowatt hours here.
Yeah, because it can be very useful too. Like, well, it's not if it happens, like it can be a game changer, like, even a life changer to some extent. If it's really a bad situation, like especially with the new hurricane season coming, for the south, the southeast, it could be they expect it to be another hard one. So if you're looking into some energy storage solution, I'll do it pretty soon if I were you, because there's going to be another shortage, I think, like there was with Puerto Rico last year when Tesla started sending Powerwalls there, and they just couldn't find anyone to install them or anything. But I just talked yesterday with the guys at Green Mountain Power in Vermont, and of course there were big storms recently in the northeast, like big just crazy wind, so that can knock the power down in some places. And they have 2,000 power wall in their in their warehouses. And
Green Mountain Power does?
Yeah, they have 2,000 of them. I posted an article this week, which is weird because a lot of people are looking for power walls.
I was going to say, I can use one of those.
Yeah, so they told me that they already have all of them. So that was surprising to me, like, because they said that they have 220 installed right now, and they're just slowly installing all of them. And that's what the girl said from the VP of External Affairs at Green Mountain Power, that with the recent loss of powers that they have from the storms, those customers that had the power walls, they were okay. They had a few hours that the electric utility needed to put the system back online. They just used the power wall for that time.
So. What's also interesting about that, Green Mountain Power, so we have a place in Vermont as well. Mm-hmm. Green Mountain Power has time of use, and they're big swings. Mm-hmm. So during the high time, which is like, you know, during the daylight, in the beginning of the day, or actually the afternoon, it's like over 20 cents per kilowatt hour, which is pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. But it drops down below 10 cents per kilowatt hour at night and in the morning. So you could actually fill up your power wall all night with Green Mountain Power, and then deplete your power wall during the day, and you would save half off your electricity bill.
Yeah. And what you could do, since you're not there in a week too, you could just have your power wall there with a very small solar system and just feed it slowly during the week, and use your power wall with pretty much free solar electricity with just like a less than one kilowatt system.
That's actually the plan. But the problem is we have electric heating there, so it's not cheap.
Yeah,
which certainly it not. Sucks.
So going back to the solar wall solar roof installations, the interesting, like I said, the one with from Yuyin wasn't connected to the grid, wasn't powered up yet. But the other one that we reported on last week actually got turned on this week, and they had the same issue with a long wait time for the electric utility to power it on. But it was turned on early this week, or this weekend, I think. But we reported on it on Monday. And she, the owner of the house, she posted a bunch of a screenshot of her Tesla app showing the power flow, which I think is pretty cool. You see the power flow of the first solar roof, feeding the power pack at the power wall, feeding the house itself, which, as I said, noted when we put the article together, is pretty low handle use for electricity consumption for the house. Like, there was 1.4 kilowatts, which is pretty low. But what it did is just it feeded the power wall instead. Because at one point it was a 6.2 kilowatt capacity. The actual official capacity is apparently 9.8, but was taken during a cloudy day and also early in the morning, which is not optimal power for a solar installation. And so it was at one point feeding the full power wall, and once the power wall was completely filled, it started feeding back into the grid. So the first power wall, first solar roof for a customer installation, started feeding back to the grid at the rate of 5.8 kilowatts.
Yeah, that's I like the app too. So it's got solar, grid, power wall, and then home usage. What I don't like about it is it doesn't show the DC to AC conversion, which is, you know, you'll have some loss there. And, you know, technically you want to keep your DC DC, and you want to, you know, kind of keep those things from going back and forth because you lose some electricity there.
Yeah.
But it is kind of cool to see how it works. Like you're looking, it simplifies because you know the Powerwall system is very complicated. When you go offline, like it's a lot of stuff. Anyway, you basically have four poles. You have the grid, solar, home, Powerwall. And if you have more solar, it goes into your home. And then if your home's full, then it goes into the grid. And then, you know, after that, or if your Powerwall is not full, it goes into the Powerwall. So it's pretty simple and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's also, as a little thing with Tesla, it's really clean, clean UI, pleasing to the eye. And I think they're going to keep working on that. Recently, they said that the, because SolarCity had their separate app for electricity usage and electricity generation and everything. And apparently now it's being folded into Tesla's app. So they're really pushing Tesla app instead. And it's the very same app that you have if you're a Tesla vehicle owner and you can switch between your solar system. So it's not just a solar roof, but by the way, it's also the if you have like a solar module installation from back of the SolarCity day or now since it's been converted into Tesla energy. But that's pretty much it for what I had to say about the solar roof. I don't know if we have anything else to add to that.
Well, I was looking at the comments on YouTube and a lot of people are wondering, which something we talked about before was the 200,000 model, when does Tesla hit 200,000?
Yeah.
And at the very beginning, people were talking about is Tesla slowing down U.S. deliveries so that they can hit the thing at the end of the month? And we did talk about that a couple times before.
Yeah.
But
statistically, go ahead. Statistically, they have to hit it in Q2. So they have to hit it within the next 3 months. If they don't change anything, I mean. So if it's business as usual, they would hit it this month. So, of course, what we think right now is that they're not going to do business as usual, and it's going to be some playing with the number and everything and pushing a few deliveries in the U.S. to Q3 in order to have the 200,000 mark hit in the first week of Q3. It's just common sense at this point. And we're starting to potentially see some indication of that. Very good example. Canadian deliveries are starting right now, apparently. We've saw a few Model 3s in Montreal and I think on other delivery centers, not delivery centers, but just stores and regular stores and service center in Canada. So they're starting that right now. And someone like Seth, who has a Model 3 on order for weeks now, for 4 or 5 weeks, hasn't had a delivery date yet. So I think we're going to start to see more of that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're hitting the brakes. It makes sense. Like it would be kind of stupid not to, just because there's going to be so much more money from the government. I know the shorts love to talk about how Tesla's on the dole, but it just makes sense. Like, why not take all this extra money that's out there?
Yeah, because if I'm just making some quick math here. So if they are at that point, 5,000 a week on 12 weeks, that's 60,000 cars. And that's $3,500 per car or more because since it's still a phase out, you still get $3,500. So it's $3,500 more that you would have gotten otherwise. So that's how much do you think that is?
I have no idea.
$210 million. So if you don't do that, you're basically leaving up to $210 million on the table. So of course you do it. no one does that. It's certainly not Elon Musk. It's not an Elon Musk his way to leave that on the table. It reminds me of I don't know if you guys also follow SpaceX a little bit, but what SpaceX is working on right now is trying to recover the fairings on the second stage of the rocket. So when they launch a rocket, the second stage is a fairing protecting the satellite or whatever they're launching into space. Sometimes it's a Tesla vehicle. That fairing is worth, I'm not sure how much it might be worth, up to 5 or even 10 million. It's worth a bunch of money, like millions of dollars. And right now it just falls into the ocean and that's it. So they were trying to recover that right now. And the approach that Elon Musk put it to his engineers working on it is, let's say it's worth $5 million. So he said, imagine that there's a crate with $5 million in cash falling from the sky. You have to catch it. So find a way to catch the crate with $5 million. So the same thing right now with Tesla. You have 210. Well, it's up to 210. So, of course, if for example, they were going to hit it in the second month of the like midway into the second quarter, then it's going to be half of that. But it could easily be between $100 and $200 million that they would be leaving on the table here if they don't just play some logistic game here and try to delay some deliveries.
And then so there's also a tail, because once they go out of 7,500, it goes down to 3,750 and then half of that again. So it's kind of interesting, because as soon as Tesla hits the 200,000, then the clock's on. Mm-hmm. And at that point, they want to shoot out as many cars as they can, because whatever the phase out period is, they could make a billion cars, and they all get some sort of subsidy.
So, yeah, I should repeat that my calculation, of course, relied upon Tesla being at 5,000 a week in Q3 when they push that. So, of course, if they're not, it's not that much. But that's why you want to push it. So you want to push it to a point where you can produce more cars. So if Tesla right now is at 2,000 a week and they're going to hit the number halfway through Q2, and at that point they are at 3,000 a week, then you want to really hold, technically you could do it for the whole Q3 if they are not satisfied with the production rate they are at, and just try to start delivery somewhere else again and open up more markets, because once they hit the 200,000 mark, they want to be at a higher level. But again, the more you push it, the more it's starting to be difficult, and the more you're going to piss off some US customers too, because it affects Model S and X too. So you can maybe just try to plan for just having to hold Model 3 for a while, but Model S and X add up to the 200,000 threshold here.
Yep.
But that's pretty much it, I think, for this week's episode. So thanks a lot for listening, guys. 176 people are watching live, so thanks a lot to those 176 people specifically. Then also for everyone else watching to you on YouTube afterwards and on all your podcast app for audio only. Thanks a lot to our Patreon specifically. We have 228 Patreons. We are making our work a lot easier. And you can always contribute to Patreon by going to patreon.com/electrek. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye, Seth.
Take it easy.